Well, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Iraqi forces in a final push on Ramadi. Iraqi military commanders say they have gained control of the main government compound on the contested city of Ramadi, and that engineers are still clearing the site of explosive devices left behind by fleeing Islamic State fighters. By late Sunday, Iraqi forces were still not yet declaring total victory. The commander of the Iraqi anti-terrorism contingent says Iraqi troops are making rapid headway in Ramadi against the Islamic State, which took control of the city 7 months ago. Lieutenant General Abdul al-Abadi said within the next few days, Iraqi troops will have control of Ramadi. It's still not clear how many civilians remained in the central city, 100 kilometers west of Baghdad. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani says that it is up to Muslims to improve the world's opinion of Islam. During a speech at the opening ceremony of the International Islamic Unity Conference in Tehran on Sunday, President Rouhani said Muslims must remove Islam's negative image from today's cyber and real space. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for an attack in northeastern Kenya that killed at least two police officers and wounded two others Sunday. A statement on a pro-Shabaab website said fighters from the group ambushed a Kenyan military convoy as it left the town of El Wak bound for Mandera. Afghanistan and Pakistan are pledging to jointly work for an early resumption of peace talks between Kabul and the Taliban and deal with insurgent groups who refuse to quit violence and join the process. The pledge came Sunday during talks in Kabul between the visiting Pakistani military chief and Afghan leaders. This is VOA News. A Syrian filmmaker known for his anti-Islamic State documentaries was fatally shot in front of midday crowds in the Turkish city of Gaziantep Sunday. The pro-human rights group for which Naci Cerf worked blames Islamic State for the murder. He was reportedly gunned down from a car that passed by as he was walking down a street not far from the Syrian border. Neither the militants nor Turkish police have commented. Israeli forces shot dead two Palestinians after they stabbed and wounded an Israeli soldier in the occupied West Bank. The military said the attackers, aged 17 and 23, stabbed a soldier at a gas station near the city of Nablus. Earlier Sunday, a Palestinian stabbed and injured a soldier near Jerusalem's main bus station. A security guard apprehended the attacker, who was then taken into police custody. Violent weekend weather battered large portions of the southern and central United States, with tornadoes killing at least 11 people in Texas. One of several tornadoes that struck in and near the city of Dallas late Saturday carried winds of more than 320 kilometers an hour, leaving at least 8 people dead. 3 others died nearby as a residential building in a northern suburb was destroyed. Authorities say scores of others were injured in the region, and that happened just days after tornadoes killed at least 18 people in nearby states of Mississippi, Arkansas, and Tennessee. Forecasters have issued severe weather advisories for large parts of the southern and central United States. They include blizzard warnings for parts of New Mexico, northern Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni is hoping to jumpstart fresh peace negotiations between the government of Burundi and opposition groups in Kampala Monday. Backed by the East African Community and the UN Security Council, the peace talks are aimed at restoring security in Burundi following months of violence in the capital Bujumbura and other parts of the country. China's parliament passed a controversial anti-terror law requiring foreign technology firms to comply with government requests for information, including encryption keys that turn digital data into unreadable code. The official Xinhua news agency said the legislation was passed unanimously Sunday and will take effect January 1st. Star Wars: The Force Awakens may be set in a galaxy far, far away, but its Christmas Day record-breaking performance was an impressive earthbound gift for the Walt Disney Company that produced the film. The Force Awakens is now the champion of North American Christmas Day box office receipts, with $49.3 million, overtaking the previous record of $24.6 set by Sherlock Holmes. Worldwide, the movie's taken in $1 billion. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Stakeholders in Burundi's conflict begin talks today in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
We cannot talk about what is going on in Burundi today without talking about the killings, the everyday killings that are going on. We cannot talk about the crisis in Burundi without talking about this decision to send troops in Burundi.
That's Burundian journalist Innocent Muhozi, who is at the talks in Kampala, campaigning for this week's Central African Republic election, reaches the rebel-held northern part of the country. And South Sudan rebels call on President Salva Kiir to withdraw his Christmas Eve decision to create 28 new states.
Creation of more states definitely is actually in violation of the agreement that we have signed. So we are basically stating clearly that President Salva should stick to the implementation of the agreement, which is saying 10 states for the next 3 years.
Ezekiel Lo Gatkov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs for the SPLA in opposition. Meanwhile, South Sudan's foreign minister says Mr. Gatkov should stop preaching war. Scientists study slums for signs of spreading super germs, and an athletics program helps Kenyan kids with disabilities. Those stories, plus Mark Omar's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Talks among Burundi's rival parties aimed at finding solutions to the country's crisis opened today, Monday, in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The crisis began in April this year after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced a decision to run for a controversial third term, which the opposition believed violated the 2006 Arusha Agreement that ended Burundi's civil war. Both the United Nations and the African Union have called for an all-inclusive dialogue among Burundian stakeholders under the auspices of the East African Community, mediated by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. Joining us now from Kampala is Innocent Muhozi, General Manager of the Band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network. Good morning, Innocent.
Good morning, James.
Thank you very much. You are in Kampala, Uganda, where the dialogue is to begin today, Monday. Who do you see is attending this first phase of the dialogue?
The main stakeholders of the Burundi crisis are around. There are the people from the government. I've seen the foreign minister, Mr. Alain Namiswe. I've seen the president advisor in communication, Mr. Willy Namiswe. I saw the deputy president of the ruling party, Mr. Joseph Nakarutimana. There are people from the opposition also, François Nyamoya from MSK, Mr. Leonard Nyangoma, people from the civil society, people from this CNARED, as they call it, but also civil society and the media representatives. I see international organizations like African Union representative in Bujumbura, ICGR representative also.
Now, let's talk about who is not there. Recently, last week, the new rebel movement came up. Do you think they are sending representation?
No, for sure they will not be there because they were not invited to this meeting just because they make them know about them very recently. And so most of the people who were invited to this meeting are the ones who were at the first meeting in Bujumbura.
You mentioned Canary. The government has referred to some of these stakeholders that you referred to, particularly in the opposition, as terrorist organizations. Is the government willing to talk with these terrorist organizations?
I think this is just propaganda because if the government don't talk with CNARED, with whom is he going to talk? This is the opposition. If they say they are not going to talk with the opposition, so they're not going to talk with no one at all. So it's a nonsense. Maybe it was just propaganda for internal reasons. If they don't talk to them, there will be no dialogue at all.
Innocent, the key point here was that the opposition believed President Nkurunziza violated the Arusha Accord. What are they going to be talking about? Are they going to say that President Nkurunziza should step down?
You know, this is the starting point of the crisis. But now, with what is happening, the killings, the everyday killings, with this decision of the African Union to send troops in Burundi, I think those points are going to be very, very, very heavy in the agenda because you cannot talk about what is going on in Burundi today without talking about the killings, the everyday killings that are going on. You cannot talk about the crisis in Burundi without talking about this decision to send troops in Burundi. So I think those points are going to be really among the ones that were identified at that time when the crisis have not reached the point that it reached today.
Why do you think President Pierre Nkurunziza's government now is going to be going into this dialogue? Why do you think they decide to do so now? Could it be due to maybe international pressure on them?
Yes, there's international pressure on them. Everybody on this earth is putting pressure on them. So they are there. But I'm not expecting nothing as important decision about the crisis in Burundi. It's going to be accusation against accusation. So there have to be many other things before there is a significant step that could be made from this dialogue.
Innocent, thank you very much again. We shall check with you again perhaps Tuesday morning.
You're welcome, welcome.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In the Central African Republic, the presidential campaign has reached the far north of the country. This past week, presidential candidate Karim Makasua visited a part of the country that is still under rebel control. Earlier this month, a rebel group led by ex-Seleka leader Noureddin Adam declared an autonomous region there, saying elections would not take place in areas under their control. In Bariel, however, Katerina Hoyer reports the population insists they are ready to vote in the December 30th elections.
The rebels' claim for an independent state did not last long, as the transition government in Bangui and the United Nations swiftly denounced the pseudo-republic. Days later, candidate Karim Makasua arrived in Birao, the provincial capital in the far north of the country, where the ex-Seleka rebels still have a stronghold. Descending on the tarmac, where he was greeted by cheering supporters and UN peacekeepers, the presidential candidate declared his visit a victory for democracy.
You know, the extremists had at a moment donné caressé l'idée.
The extremists were trying to scare the people not to vote. They even called for a split of the country. However, the population didn't let the terrorists stop them. What we see today are people who are determined to vote. Over the years, Birao has been largely forgotten by the Bangui government. The road leading from the airport into town is gravel and rocks. The airport itself had not been used in years until the UN peacekeepers deployed here last year. Schools remain closed due to continued insecurity. The hospital only reopened this year. Makasua said, the people in Birao feel forgotten by the state. This is what allowed the rebels to take control and recruit unemployed youth before they marched on Bangui in 2013. To prevent the rebels from taking control again, good schools and jobs for the youth is absolutely necessary. Ibrahim says, the road is a disaster, there is no security. The bandits are attacking cars coming from Sudan to Birao and steal the cargo. They'll kill you for a nice motorbike or cell phone. The continued insecurity and presence of armed groups is a reminder of the challenges ahead for the new government, including addressing the violence, tackling impunity and disarming the militia and rebel groups while regaining control of a territory controlled by the armed groups. On December 13th, the people in the Central African Republic went to the polls to vote in a referendum on a new constitution. Voters overwhelmingly backed the changes to the constitution, including a limit on the president's time in power to 2 terms. The day was marked by violence. In Bangui, at least 5 people were killed and 34 were wounded. Ahead of Wednesday's vote, the country depends heavily on UN peacekeepers and French forces to secure voters and polling stations. In many northern towns, the National Army is nowhere to be seen. In Beirao, the Sultan was reassured the rebels would allow the people to vote. The Sultan says, we will vote for Kar against independence and to remind the leaders in Bangui we exist. Katrina Heye, VOA, Birao.
Today's Monday, December 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send out shout out to listeners on all our affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. An official of South Sudan's rebels, loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar, says President Salva Kiir's decree creating 28 new states violates the spirit of the August Peace Accord. In the decree issued Christmas Eve, President Kiir also appointed 28 new governors, all of them loyal to him. The president's announcement came as rebel advance teams are in Juba to work with their government counterparts for the joint implementation of the August peace agreement. Ezekiel Logakov is the secretary for foreign affairs of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He says the rebels are urging President Kiir to rescind his Christmas Eve decree.
Our position has been very clear, James. We have an agreement signed on the 17th and on the 26th of August 2015. And the agreement is clearly stating that there will be only 10 states in South Sudan for the last coming 3 years. So creating 28 states is basically not in line with the agreement that we have signed. And President Salva Kiir knows very well that there are only 10 states in the agreement that he has signed. And also, Dr. Riek Machar Teng, my chairman, is also aware that there are only 10 states in the agreement. So creation of more states definitely is actually in violation of the agreement that we have signed. So we are basically stating clearly that President Salva should stick to the implementation of the agreement, which is saying 10 states for the next 3 years.
In reality, you are saying the creation of these more states will be a stumbling block to the implementation.
Definitely, because if President Salva Kiir is committed to peace, which I believe he is because he has signed this agreement, he should be sticking to the letters and spirit of the agreement. The agreement is saying we will have 10 states, we will form a government of national unity, which will be including all parties. We will be reconstituting the parliament. We will be actually restructuring all the institutions in the government of the Republic of South Sudan. So clearly, this is what the agreement is saying. So if you are going to operate outside the agreement, definitely you are violating it. So we are calling on the government and the president of the Republic of South Sudan, General Salva Kiir Mayardi, to implement the agreement. One. Two, to revise the decision that he has taken. And three, let him subject this into the permanent constitutional making process. So if the demand for creating more states is very popular and the people of South Sudan are for more states, then definitely it will go through in the permanent constitutional making process. We in the SPLM-SPLA in opposition, we are championing the federalism, a federal system in the country. We are not objecting to creating more states, but we are objecting to creating more states that is actually contradicting the agreement. More states can be created as long as the boundaries are delineated, and clearly we know that they are reflecting the British colonial districts of 1956, the districts that were created when the British handed over Sudan into the new republic. So we wanted to make sure that we use the former British districts because they are clearly delineated and we know who is actually from where.
Ambassador Ezekiel Logatkov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. He was speaking with me from Pagak, South Sudan. Meanwhile, South Sudan's Foreign Minister, Banama Meral Benjamin, says President Kiir's Christmas Eve decree creating 28 new states is within the bounds of the country's constitution. He said all South Sudanese are on the path to peace, and rebel Foreign Affairs Secretary Ezekiel Logakov should climb down from his warlike behavior.
I think Ezekiel is behind time. We are talking about peace now. We are talking that the peace has come and that we are going to implement the peace process. If there are any issues he thinks that are violated, let him come in and we discuss them internally here. Their advance team is already here. President Salva Kiir cannot do something which is not constitutional. It's according to our transitional constitution. They themselves in exile, they had actually announced 21 states and even named governors to it. They had never rescinded that, did they? I think Ezekiel should behave like an ambassador as usual. The issue is reconciling our people, bringing them together, and then bringing peace and stability. And anything can be resolved under the umbrella of peace and solidarity and brotherhood and sisterhood.
But, Mr. Minister, don't you see probably your government is poking the rebels in the eye? If you said you are for peace, why don't you wait until everybody come aboard, then you can discuss the creation?
A government, a country of like 12 billion people, with the government institutions running, cannot be held as hostage. The government will continue to do the things that are entrusted through the constitution of this country, that is the transitional constitution. It's a country with parliament, a country with government, it's a country with judiciary. We cannot put everything on hold because somebody called Ezekiel is outside the country. No, it cannot be. There's no poking in the eye here. We're talking about peace. And there are many things that are being done which indicate that really peace has started. Why doesn't he talk about those things which are pushing forward the peace process? I think there's no poking in the eye here. It is Ezekiel who is trying to find other excuses in order to move on his warlike attitude like before. And I think the government is for peace, President Salva is for peace, and I believe Dr. Riek Machar is equally for peace. He's chief negotiator with a very responsible team are already here in Juba. We are moving together, we are talking on all these issues. So I would really advise him to stop making such negative pronouncements. Come back home here, and we sit and resolve these issues.
Barnum Amaral Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister. You're speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Two-thirds of humanity will live in cities by mid-century, according to the United Nations. Rapid, unplanned growth in many of the urban areas of the developing world has people, livestock, and wildlife living in close proximity with inadequate sanitary services. As microbes evolve in these new environments, researchers wonder what new germs might emerge that could launch the next epidemic. VOA's Steve Baragona reports a project is underway that aims to shed light on how microbes move through the slums of Nairobi.
Joseph Mwai is a farmer. He raises cows, pigs, chickens, and goats, though it's not entirely by choice, he says.
It's important for me because I don't have any job to do. I make a living from there.
Mwai's farm is in the middle of Nairobi's Viwandani slum. A trash dump smolders behind his homestead, across a stream polluted with raw sewage. It's a rich environment for the spread of bacteria and other microbes.
You've got people, you've got livestock, you've got wildlife mixing together in this stew of garbage and human waste and animal waste. The opportunities for microbes to exchange genes and mix and match in new ways is tremendous.
Because microbes that pass from creature to creature pass their genes around too.
Yeah, especially the resistant genes to drugs.
John Kairu is a molecular biologist with the Kenya Medical Research Institute. He says, for example, his team found bacteria called E. coli that are resistant to 4 antibiotics. Then they found resistance spreading to other germs.
The same block of resistant genes that we had found in E. coli were actually now in Salmonella.
Even more concerning, cholera germs may have also picked up those resistance genes.
High resistance, high virulence. Actually, what you end up creating is a super bug.
But scientists know very little about how any bugs move through this complex environment. So a team of researchers are visiting households across Nairobi. They're swabbing people. They're swabbing livestock. They're sampling the ground with white paper booties. University of Liverpool veterinarian Judy Betteridge explains why.
To try and understand on a small scale, I mean, even within just sort of 20 meters, how are those bacteria shared? And then when we scale it up, are the bacteria here being shared with the household that's 50 meters over there or 100 meters over there? So how far can they actually spread?
And can they spread further through food, for example? Once they find out, Kairu says, they need to be careful not to point fingers.
We are not necessarily investigating who is spreading the resistant or the virulent organisms, but actually we are trying to solve a problem.
The problem to solve? The conditions that spread new germs through the slums of Nairobi and beyond. Steve Baragona, VOA News, Nairobi.
Children in Kenya with intellectual disabilities are often seen as a result of witchcraft. So getting the attention and services they need is a difficult task. But Catholic Relief Services is working with Special Olympics in the Nairobi slum of Kawangware to provide activities and support system to these children and their parents. Joel Craig has more from Nairobi.
Living in a Nairobi slum is not easy. Electricity is scarce, clean water expensive, sanitation poor, and quality education hard to come by. But for children living with disabilities, slum life becomes even more difficult.
It's one thing if you're a kid with special needs or intellectual disabilities in a developed country. But when you consider kids growing up in a slum in Nairobi or any other slum in a major urban area in Africa, there's a huge need there, I think.
Nancy McNally of Catholic Relief Services says there are additional challenges for children with disabilities in Kenya.
If they have intellectual disabilities, then sometimes they're ostracized by their own communities, by their own parents. You know, there are some superstitions that the kids might be cursed.
So to help these children and provide a support system for their parents, Catholic Relief Services and Special Olympics started a young athletes program in the Nairobi slum of Kawangware. The program caters to children with intellectual disabilities ages 2 to 7, who come to an early childhood development center twice a week to participate in activities with other children. Social workers also conduct home visits, helping parents with emotional encouragement and positive parenting techniques. At the same time, parents like Justice Idalia are able to get support from other parents dealing with similar issues. That's important because Idalia says caring for his son Jason is a round-the-clock responsibility.
These children need a very lot of care because you can't leave these children for a neighbor to take care of him. You are the one who is responsible.
Parents rarely get a break because even schooling is a problem. Ann Mushiri says many parents here cannot afford what are called special schools that service children with disabilities.
Most of them don't have a school to go to because the special schools are too expensive for them, cannot afford it. And then again, some schools don't want these children, so they just stay with them at home.
Jason's dad is unusual because most of the children's caregivers are single mothers whose husbands often leave them.
Most fathers don't like this child with a disability. Most parents, like dad, they see the child with the disability is like an outcast.
But Idalia, who is actively parenting his son, says the program has helped.
Because right now he has got a very good improvement.
There are currently 74 children in the program, and organizers say they hope to expand. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with boxing. Ugandan Edward Shaka Kakembo is the new Africa Boxing Union featherweight champion. This after he beat Nigerian Waidi Skoro Usman by a split decision in their 12-round bout in Lagos, Nigeria on Saturday night. This showdown was the draw card at the GoTV Boxing Night event. Meanwhile, Uganda's Donald Rukari is the latest addition to the arbitrators serving at the Court of Arbitration in Sports, CAS. Based in Lausanne, Switzerland, CAS is the highest court of appeal in sports disputes. The CAS rulings are binding on all parties. Rukare is also the Uganda Olympic Committee General Secretary and Africa Swimming Federation Vice President. Rukare told the Kampala media that work at CAS is not a full-time job. Therefore, he'll continue to serve in his elective position. Turning to football, visitors at Tunisia edged their Algerian under-20 peers 2-1 in the second friendly match in a week played in the Algerian capital Algiers on Saturday. In Somali, military side Hosed edged domestic league champions and police outfit Higan 3-1 in a post-match penalty shootout to win the Somali Super Cup played in the capital Mogadishu. The two sides played to a scoreless stalemate in open play. This encounter was a milestone as fans in the Somali diaspora for the first time watched live international transmission of a match played in Mogadishu. London-based Universal Television is collaborating with the Somali Football Federation to uplift the profile of Somali football. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you make this week a very productive one.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, Managing Money. Do you find it difficult to do? Are you saving for your education, marriage, or retirement? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing managing money. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.